Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 17th, 2017. Begosh and begora, DR. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Top of the evening to you. Yes, we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. DR Tucker, who looks, he doesn't have a green tie on, but he will have one tomorrow. So, DR, tell me, over the past week, of course, the news changes so fast. Who knows what things will be like in the short interval between the time we record this and the time that it gets posted. But President, I hate to say it, the 45th President of the United States put up a proposed budget for the United States of America for the coming fiscal year. And that budget, well, let me ask you, DR, I'll let you explain, say, from a top-level overall perspective, but a particular focus on climate issues, what is the new budget going to do?
Well, as Dan Farber of Legal Planet notes, that the budget reflects the vision of Trump's Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, who considers investment in taking action on climate change a, quote, waste of your money, unquote. Farber lists the proposed cuts as possible. EPA's research on air, climate, and energy would be cut 50%, and overall EPA's Office of Research and Development would be cut to $223 million, which is roughly half. $900 million would be cut from the Department of Energy's Office of Science. $250 million would be cut from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, $102 million would be cut from NASA, and $2 billion would be cut from weatherization programs, including programs overseen by the Department of Energy. The budget also goes after such things as National Institutes of Health's funding as well, and it would essentially destroy the U.S. Global Change Research Program, which was started in 1990 by President George H.W. Bush. Funding of that would be zeroed out. EPA funding would be cut overall 25%, with staff cut by 20%. That was earlier information.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be cuts to the Department of Agriculture and just a general, savaging of every single, virtually every single thing.
I heard that the State Department was going to get a big cut, but most of the cuts to the State Department were going to be to climate-related funds that were, you know, the Green Energy Fund and support of Paris. Is that true as well?
That's what I had heard as well. Now, obviously, it has been pointed out from a number of different perspectives that, you know, this budget will likely not be the final version of what gets passed, but still in terms of what the vision overall is, you can just see how barbaric it is, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my concern is what everyone says. The first thing they say is, well, this is just the beginning. Congress has to weigh in. But, I mean, there's a bunch of crazies in Congress who wouldn't mind doing, you know, even half of this badness would be still be pretty bad, right? And so the idea that, that somehow the Freedom Caucus is going to protect the EPA is ludicrous. I mean, this is I mean, but I guess I don't have a good, I mean, you read stuff about Steve Bannon and the administrative state, deconstructing the administrative state and that kind of stuff. Do you think that's the underlying thing, or is it somehow that David Koch and the oil barons are looking for everything that could conceivably relate to climate, and we're going to, you know, cut that out as kind of, I mean, why this sort of draconian heavy cuts?
I think that this is essentially, they're trying to sort of cut as much as possible with the, going back to something that I believe it was Myra Nobel of the Competitive Enterprise Institute said, that the idea is that if in 4 to 8 years there is an administration that comes into power and has the goal of taking action on climate change, so much of the infrastructure that would be used to sort of advance, you know, pro-climate policies will essentially be gutted. The idea is to sort of, essentially what they're acting as for want of a better phrase, human termites destroying the infrastructure of the House that is the federal government. This is, in fact, as you suggest, as Steve Bannon said, the deconstruction of the administrative state.
So it's not even particularly well targeted. It's just cut money to everything and let the bureaucracies collapse from being hollowed out. I mean, you hear all these words in the news, but I mean, that's the strategy, you think?
Exactly. This is going all the way back to when Newt Gingrich ran around and essentially tried to sort of undo the government. Mm-hmm. And now this is apparently trying to bring Newt Gingrich's dream to nightmarish life, so to speak.
So I guess I think I kind of answered my own question, but I mean, how it's so terrible. And in the past, as you say, Newt Gingrich tried to do this in 1996 or something, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to cut, public broadcasting, zero that out, zero out the National Endowment for the Arts. Now they're trying to do it again. Do you think they can succeed, or is it just, as President Obama said to Mr. Romney, please proceed, right? Knock yourself out trying to kill the public radio.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how much public mobilization there will be to sort of get Congress to sort of put a stop to this, and also longer term, whether this serves to drive up a turnout in the 2018 midterms so that in 2019, if Trump proposes a similar budget, it will be a literally DOA in Congress, as opposed to being theoretically DOA now. But again, it goes back to the point that we've emphasized over and over again, that elections have consequences, especially elections that end in the way the last election did. And when people say that, there's no real difference between different political philosophies, obviously we're seeing that being disproved now, because, you know, can you imagine if President Hillary Clinton, I doubt very highly she would have done anything approaching this.
True enough. But I saw Samantha Bee on Full Frontal, I guess, it was this past week, and she was pointing out that in the mayoral election in Los Angeles, that only 12% of the people voted.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, guys. I mean, not to get moralistic or anything, but it's like, why was there not a huge turnout, right? Just to practice. I mean, do you think that, I don't know. I mean, will all of the marching translate into votes? I know you've said it in the past, right? You know, progressives march and conservatives vote, right?
But exactly. And it goes back to something Paul Weyrich, the late activist Paul Weyrich, said in 1980, where he said that, you know, there's this mentality among some people that they want everybody to vote. And he, Paul Weyrich, didn't want everybody to vote because right-wing influence increases the more the vote decreases. Mm-hmm. And again, we're seeing that again borne out here. If you think about all the people who turned out in previous elections to put pro-climate action politicians into the White House, the House, and the Senate, so many of those people didn't turn out in 2016, and now you're seeing the egregious consequences.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, there is a pretty terrible budget, and as they say, if a budget is a moral document of your vision for the country, then our 45th.
This is an immoral document.
This is an immoral document. Yeah, I think that the thing to do is to impress upon your congressman how bad the cuts would be. And of course, we have focused on sort of environmental climate related cuts, but there are horrific cuts everywhere. I mean, they are really, really. So please speak up. Don't be afraid to call your congressman. So there's just a plethora of deplorable news this week. But the, for example, the 45th president went to Detroit and is trying to roll back the Obama-era automotive fuel standards, which, I mean, I think, I have a feeling that Trump signs these executive orders with such a flourish as if they have more content than they do. And he leaves the impression of this, you know, strong executive giving orders to, you know, you stand up, you sit down, you go over there, you go up back and mow the grass. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got something to do. But it takes years to actually accomplish these things, right? So yes. Writing an executive order is scary to people that are that like the executive order, but it's going to take a while mm-hmm. to make anything happen, right?
Exactly. You can't simply wave a magic wand and sort of alter fuel economy standards. I believe it was Brad Plumer in Vox who had a great piece about, you know, the time it takes to sort of develop new standards. It's mm-hmm. not, again, Trump is not a king. He's not a dictator yet. And he can't just simply decree that these standards be relaxed. But mm-hmm. obviously he's going to try to fight as aggressively as possible in order to relax them. It'll be interesting to see if the American public fights as aggressively against him.
Yeah, I think he's putting on a show. Right? He's a showman. He's mm-hmm. a con artist. And so all these big orders, people think he's done something when in fact he mm-hmm. hasn't. And then he can... So tell me,
keep in mind that, you know, these automakers, even though they're claiming that it's too hard for them to meet these standards, surely they know that, you know, a changing of the guard could take place and you could have somebody in there within 4 to 8 years will be even more aggressive than Obama was in terms of fuel economy standards. And then they'll have to deal with that issue. So presumably this is just a sort of an attempt to delay the inevitable, even though the automakers have to know they can't stop the inevitable in terms of, you know, reduced emissions for automobiles.
I mean, what I was struck with along the same lines is the idea that if the auto executives want to relax the fuel efficiency standards, fine, but mm-hmm. they won't be able to sell those cars in any other country but the United States. So they mm-hmm. now confine themselves to being sort of a national supplier in the U.S. market, and they can't mm-hmm. sell these vehicles in China, India, Europe, because they're not going to meet the economy standards. And mm-hmm. that just seems to be short-sighted in the extreme. Right, because the rest of the world is going to march along with mm-hmm. different technologies, and for them to try and change the game here in the U.S. just seems to be nonsensical.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
That's why I'm not ahead of a automotive giant. That's why I'm not exactly. ahead of General Motors. Mm-hmm. So I guess the other maybe we have a couple of uplifting things, but one thing that's a little bit may bring a smile to your face is the idea that our new EPA administrator, mm-hmm. Mr. Scott Pruitt, who of late has said things like he's not really sure that carbon dioxide causes global warming. You know, he's, mm-hmm. he's a little confused. He's got to talk to the scientists, mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. On one hand, there was a very interesting interview on public radio recently with Gina McCarthy, who is the former mm-hmm. head of the EPA, who is a saint. We should call her Saint Gina because she did mm-hmm. all the right things as yes. opposed to Mr. Pruitt. But a more consequential thing is that I heard that the following thing is that under the Obama administration, in order to protect scientists, the EPA instituted a policy about, in quotation marks, the integrity of science, right? And this was mm-hmm. a policy that was intended not to to protect scientists who wanted to speak out on issues that they couldn't be, you know, politically thrown under the bus. And mm-hmm. some aspect of that integrity policy also had to do with the integrity of the agency in terms of scientific information, and that you had to put out, I guess, correct scientific information, which you would mm-hmm. think. I think that is the basis for a legal suit against Scott Pruitt, right? Did I get that right? Did you see anything like that?
Well, the Sierra Club has filed a formal complaint with the Inspector General of the EPA, claiming that Pruitt's remarks on CNBC violated the agency's scientific integrity policy, which of course requires you, in essence, to be in accord with mainstream science. Mm-hmm. And when he runs off and denies mainstream science, that puts him at odds with that scientific integrity policy. My understanding is that the Office of the Inspector General has, in fact, received the complaint and is sort of taking it under advisement. It's unclear, you know, how they'll decide one way or the other.
And Justin, let me interrupt you. The Inspector General is basically the Inspector General of the EPA, Every agency has an inspector general. They're basically kind of the legal counsel and the people that are the enforcers within the organization, right?
Exactly.
So that's who you'd go to if you have a complaint about the integrity of the administrator, right?
And it would be interesting if the inspector general of the EPA did in fact decide that he had violated the scientific integrity policy.
Mm-hmm.
My prediction remains that this gentleman will not last too long in the position. We still see all these sort of all the speculation about internal revolt at the EPA, and career officials at the EPA making it very, very clear that they're not going to sort of kneel down when he orders them to kneel down.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just sort of tell that Mr. Pruitt is not the sort of person who can deal with a lot of pushback. And if he gets unrelenting pushback, he might push himself out of that position.
Well, we can only hope. We can only hope they are. Well, so there's that. I mean, there's a couple of interesting good news stories. One mm-hmm. is the following thing, which I'll try and explain relatively quickly, even though it's pretty complex. So you've heard of something, DR, I'm sure you've heard of something called Bitcoin, which mm-hmm. is to my mind, this kind of magical internet currency, right? You get mm-hmm. Bitcoins, they're on your computer, but they're really worth actual value, money. You can buy stuff with them. And they get traded around in exchange just like dollar bills.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that works, the Bitcoin thing works, is because there is a system for tracking the exchange of the bitcoins so that you know when something got bought or sold, right? There's this mm-hmm. this basically a database that's collecting that information. And that is called something, it's got this funny name called a blockchain kind of technology, a blockchain mm-hmm. where the transactions that relate to a bitcoin are all related. Well, mm-hmm. it turns out that for clean energy people, this is a godsend. For the mm-hmm. following reason, that if you put a solar panel on your roof, right, suppose you have a solar panel on your roof and you get a renewable energy credit, which is, again, mm-hmm. a very abstract thing. Using this blockchain technology, you can sell that credit to your neighbor who lives in the next house, mm-hmm. right, very simply and securely. So now you can create an energy exchange market in your neighborhood among just real people selling the power on the green aspect of the power on their roof. And it's a green energy marketplace that is facilitated and allowed by this blockchain strategy, which comes out of the crazy Bitcoin thing. Did mm-hmm. you see anything about that, DR? I think it's the coolest thing going.
It was a great story in terms of clean energy distribution. I guess you can sort of think of it as PayPal for the planet.
Exactly right. And what it does is it cuts out the utility. So now the utility mm-hmm. is not involved at all because the electricity was made on your roof. You get the renewable energy credits. You can sell those renewable energy credits to the guy next door mm-hmm. easily. I mean, it's all sort of automated, right? So you don't have to like borrow a cup of sugar or something from the guy next door.
Mm-hmm.
All that works, and what it does is it puts another nail in the coffin of the utility business, right, which mm-hmm. is a monopoly created by the government to make power in point A and transport it over telephone lines to point B for you to use. It just subverts mm-hmm. that whole thing. It's kind of like Uber, right? Uber mm-hmm. and the taxis.
Exactly.
So I like it. I think it's...
It gives new meaning to performing under your own power, so to speak.
Exactly. So there's that. There's the blockchain thing for the techno mm-hmm. geeks. Then for the other people who have the sort of romantic idea that of how to get around on the water. So here's the context. The shipping industry sails back and forth across the Pacific, across the Atlantic, carrying all the goods of the world trade, right? They have not been regulated under any greenhouse gas protocol, any agreement, right? So they just go out and they burn bunker fuel and pollute, and your stuff comes from China to the West Coast, and no one worries about the carbon pollution. Well, it turns mm-hmm. out that the shipping industry is under increasing pressure to do something about climate change, and there is this idea, which I think is, again, very cool. So imagine a shipping a shipping, or a ship, a boat, carrying in all those little boxes on the shipping containers, the little cubicle boxes on the shipping liner. But sticking out of the top of that are two, shall we say, enormous tubes, steel pipes, right? And these pipes are like 15 feet in diameter, right? And there's a little electric motor that's slowly making those things rotate around, I don't know, once a second, once every 10 seconds or something. It turns out those big tubes, when the wind blows on them, okay, so just imagine, the tube's rotating, the wind's blowing on it. On one side, the wind is blowing in the same direction that the tube's rotating. On the other side, the wind is blowing in the opposite direction of the tube is rotating. And what happens is that ends up being a, when you do all the arithmetic, there's a net force that pushes the boat forward. So these are sails, right? They're rotating sails, and the energy it takes to turn the tube is much less than the energy you gain from the wind blowing on it. So now they say that these shipping container ships can save 10% of their fuel by having these rotating sails, spinning sails on board, and that it's being tested out as a potential thing for future ships. So, I don't know, Dion, maybe that doesn't tickle your heart, but I think it's the coolest thing
going. It definitely sounds like a great idea.
The next time you're in Singapore and you look out and you see all those container ships going to head through the Strait of Malacca, and all of a sudden you see a few with these funny-looking tubes sticking out the top, you can say, I heard it here first. I heard it on the Climate Minute the very first time.
Exactly.
So we'll put up a link to all of that in case you are a sailing kind of guy or girl. But I think it's pretty cool. Anyway, DR, we'll put up a link especially to that, the rotating sail thing, on the blog. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us, of course, on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Please share us with your friends so that other people can learn about climate issues. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, many other directories, and of course you can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. And keep those sails spinning. We'll talk to you soon. Right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.